What is up, guys? Welcome back to the Zach and Pat Show. I'm Zach.
I'm Pat.
This is the show about manhood, fatherhood, entrepreneurship, and the mentality it takes to be successful at those things. And we'll probably sprinkle in some helpful real estate advice too, because that's what Pat and I do. You know, guys, life can be tough. We can go through some things and struggle at times, but this is the show to let you know that you're not alone. So if you're someone out there going through any of these things, this is the show for you. Shout out to our friends at NeuroGum for keeping us energized and focused. NeuroGum is a chewing gum as well as mints. It's got caffeine, L-theanine, and vitamins B6 and 12. Helps with memory and focus. I like to chew it really, you know, all the time. Whenever I'm driving around showing houses, making calls to my clients, before a big meeting, before a workout, just anytime I feel like I need a little bit of a mental boost, I'll pop a piece of NeuroGum and it gets me to where I need to be. It's only about 40 milligrams of caffeine per piece, so it's not gonna get you super jittery and wound up. I really love the stuff. So get out there and try it.
And shout out to Captain Beard Co. If you are looking for some great men grooming products, especially when it comes to your beard, they make unbelievable beard balms, butters, and oils. They also have great products for conditioner, shampoo, body wash. I just ran out of shampoo and conditioner and need to get more, but I use the body wash every single day. I'll put in some beard oil or beard butter into my beard just to keep it looking good. But it smells amazing and it's made with all natural ingredients. So if it's something that you're interested in and looking to start taking care of those beards, as well as just men grooming altogether, it's a great product. They also have, if you're looking to set the mood, unbelievably smelling candles. Check them out and use the promo code Zach and Pat for 10% off your purchase.
And as we mentioned on one of our last episodes, we recently just joined a podcast production company here. It's called Punchline Productions. And this is actually going to be our first crossover show with one of the other shows within the network. And to introduce our awesome guests today, we have the Duck Slayer from Rugged and Ruthless. Welcome to the show.
How's it going, guys? And I have Deer Blind Mafia, DB Media, and DB Beer.
Okay, and tell us about those. What are all those?
So Duck Blind Mafia, for the guys that are on our show, because this is a crossover, it started in a duck blind one day. I was out with a bunch of my buddies. It was opening day. I was half tanked from the night before. I looked down the line and I saw everybody wearing a version of camo that was identical, but it was all competing brands. And I said, you know what? In the duck blind, I created an LLC that day, and I said I could do it better, and thus the journey. Duck Blind DB Media started because I wanted to get into this. What we're doing, we're sitting here right here. This is my pride and joy. I God gave me the gift of gab, and Pat, we've sat down at events. You know this, but I'm always trying to find out about other people. It's one of those things where our world is very closed off, and anybody that does anything, our world is very one-dimensional. We see what we want to see. We go after it. I like to get to know people because there's a lot of heroes out there that are unspoken. There's a lot of soldiers out there that are unrecognized. There's a lot of people that fight battles daily that just, they don't understand that other people are there for them. And it's a hard road for a lot of them. So what I try to do is, with Rugged and Ruthless, it's not about being out in the woods and hunting and fishing. It's about people's everyday struggles too. And so I want to embrace something that is something close to my heart. I try to talk to people that have came from nothing to start something similar to what you guys do on your podcast, but we're more the ruthless side of it. It's like business is business. I love my family. I'm polite. I do a lot of things, but as you know, I'm also very abrupt. Like, okay, that's cool, man. Go fuck yourself. And I walk out the door. It's not that I'm disrespectful, but it's like, if you're not bringing me up, you're holding me back. As Sheldon Cooper once said, and I've said this, either you're holding me back or I'm pulling you forward. But either way, you're slowing me down. So that, and the beer company came from a love of beer. And that came from somebody that once used to be important to me. And now I'm stuck on it. Now I can't drink, no offense to Anheuser-Busch, Busch Light. I can't drink anymore because I like, there's a lot of craftsmen out there that are rugged and ruthless that created something out of nothing, and now I have a taste for beer that's not the generic stuff. So that's how it all started, and I just, a dream and a will.
Gotcha. What are some of those beers that you're talking about?
Dude, we're kind of stuck on that right now, but I'm trying to make an albino stout, a couple jalapeno ones. I'm making some variant stuff. Eventually, hopefully over the next 18 months, I'll have my own brewery out here, and we'll be sitting here drinking beer on here, and we'll be, have my brand done. I already got a master brewer, but we're working on. He had to move. He's going to be on a later podcast, but we're trying to get him started, and I'm trying to, you know, silently push him to, hey man, give me what I need.
Right, that's awesome. Yeah.
Wow. So the duck, to go back to the Duck Blind Mafia. So basically, you created a version of camo. Is that my understanding?
Actually, there's going to be a few versions of camo. So what's going to end up happening is, I took something that was real and made it real. And it's a weird concept, but if you look at any type of camo in the world, like I'm wearing camo here, this is Sika. I love this Sika brand. I mean, I love the Digi camo. I was in the Army. I love the Digi camo. But in reality, though, that's great for breaking up patterns in the field. But what looks more realistic, a set of bushes or something, or Digi camo? Well, I want something that looks real. So when a duck or a deer takes a look at what we're, you know, I wanted them to see the natural environment. So I actually have been taking pictures over the last year or so from different environments and different places across the nation to make a real camo that comes out of it. So something new, something different. If you guys watch this podcast, you guys take it. I know that was y'all because I'm doing something totally different. Well, we already got this on camera, so it's good.
Well, that's awesome. So other than the camo, what are some other goals that you have for your businesses?
I want to leave a legacy for my son. My son means the world to me. There's very few things in this world that I have a soft spot for, but my boy is my soft spot. Like, I want him to realize what a good work ethic is. I want him to realize that you can come from nothing and create something great. One of my favorite sayings in the world is, you don't have to recreate the wheel to make it better. You just have to make the wheel better, of course. So I want him to see that hard work does pay off, but you're not always going to win. And that's my big thing. Boy, I love you. You are my boy, but you are going to lose and you're going to fail more times than you're going to win. Failure is just a lesson. Success is you being on top of the mountain, but you're going to have to climb that mountain your whole life. And I don't care how big it gets or how it gets, or my business, I don't care. He'll see that I had a good work ethic. I want to set him off on the right path.
Yeah, I mean, for me, success is just failing multiple times and learning from it and not giving up. You know, it's a great lesson to teach all. I mean, we all have boys here, so, you know, it's
sorry for everybody out there.
Yeah,
boys can be difficult, especially being a dad.
Especially being, yeah, single dad life, it's tough sometimes. You know, do you have your son out there hunting with you and all that yet?
Not yet. He'll be out there next year. I want him to have an appreciation. So we have a family farm, and this year I bought him his first shotgun, little 20 gauge, little Moss 20. I want him to start seeing and valuing good ethics. Because hunting, I'll say this again, hunting is a lot like life. You can prep all day long, but you're going to fail. It's going to happen. You don't go out to kill every time. You don't go out to see birds every time. You don't go out to see deer every time. 98% of all hunting is failure. The thing is how you pick yourself up from that failure. So he'll go next year with me because I want him to have appreciation of it more so than he does now.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So.
I know it's hard. It's a hard thing because you guys met him today. You saw him. He's definitely a daddy's boy. And it's one of those things where sometimes one of the hardest things about being a dad is telling them no. Because as dads with boys, you know what the world's going to bring to them. But saying no to them is the best lesson he can have. And you guys saw that with my son today.
Yeah. What are some of those things that you're doing to teach him those lessons? How are you teaching him those values, those morals, those principles, those ethics? What are you doing as a father to teach him those things? Or are you just leading by example and wanting him to see how you're doing it?
Well, I think it's a mixture of a few things because I can lead by example all day long, but my life was my life. His life is going to be totally different because I've had some success in my life. So his life's already easier by nature. So what I do is I teach him the value of a dollar. I teach him hard work and like, hey, dude, your room's not clean. You don't get to play your PlayStation night or whatever it may be. I teach him by lessons that I've learned, but he's already coming from a different spot. So he's already going to be biased towards, yeah, I have a little bit more money. Yeah, I have a little bit of this. Yeah, you can get what you want. But also I tell him when I say no, no is no. There's no way around it. saying no for most men to their sons is one of the hardest things you can say.
It's very difficult.
It'll break your heart when you have to tell your son no, because you already, being guys in this world, you already know what kind of battles he's going to fight. It doesn't get easier. The older you get, it gets harder. So saying no to him at a young age teaches him to be a stronger individual. So I'm teaching him to be strong. We go out to the farm, we work. He picks up, you know, he has chores he has to do. If he doesn't have the money for something, yo, dude, sorry. You got to work a little harder to get it. Does he have a better life than most kids? Yeah, of course he does. But he also realizes that that could be taken away too, because life is not promised. It's a gift. And I say, you have to appreciate that along the way. I mean, how do you guys do with your kids?
Yeah, well, mine are still pretty young. My youngest is 7 months. My oldest is two and a half. And you know, with a 2.5 year old, we're getting to that time where he's being argumentative. He'll tell you no. You know, when you ask him to do something, it's no. But he's, you know, the part I struggle with right now is he's just such a mama's boy. You know, and he pretty much just wants his mom for most things, you know, and there's a handful of, like, I've noticed that I'm just strictly there for play, you know, and at least that's how he kind of views me. And I struggle with that because I want to be more helpful and more like be able to contribute more, but he's just like wants his mom for everything.
Now, can I ask you a question on that? So have you ever looked at evolutionary traits of animals?
Yes, sort of.
Well, here's the thing though. Guys are playful. Guys are rough, but you're teaching them that they have to have a backbone. So that play right now, and this comes from me that has studied this stuff for a long time, play right now that you're giving him, most kids are mama boys up until about 4 or 5. And the reason for that is they want that collie. They want to feel that affection. They're learning that. They're sponges right now. But you being that rough dad playing with them and saying, hey, pick yourself up, kid, slapping them on the ass and saying, let's go, is teaching them a lot more than you think it is. So my son's a daddy's boy, but he was a mama's boy growing up. Once that transition happens, understand that what you're doing is you're teaching him that the world is rough. She's teaching him that there's a kind heart. She's teaching him how to treat a woman. You're teaching him how to be a man. So understand that that's happening. And in 2.5 years old, wait till he gets about 5. I promise you, that dynamic's going to start to change. He's like, Dad, can I go with you to work? Dad, can I go do this? Dad, I'm working the field. You'll see him out there with his little lawnmower going out there because he's learning from you, but he's also learning the other side of it. Kids have to learn both sides. So don't think that don't get hurt by him being a mom.
I struggle with it, you know, but I've been told that, you know, it's going to change. It's going to change. And I'm looking forward to it, you know, being able to just kind of see him want me for more things and being able to go play.
No, dude, on side note, be rough as fuck with him. Because it's going to teach him to have a backbone. I'm serious. Like, I didn't have a dad growing up. My dad disappeared. But I had other people, like my uncle and stuff. We worked on the farm. I learned more lessons from that than I did from my mom. Because he'll forget about that. He'll have a soft side for women, though. But just remember that.
Yeah. I mean, same for me. Like, they've wanted their mom. And especially with the divorce, it's adds a different dynamic, you know. And so, you know, they'll be with me and it'll be funny because they'll be asking to go back to see their mom. But then when I talk to her, they're like, yeah, all they want to do is go see you. And so, you know, it's figuring out when we have them and they're wanting the other parent, how do we keep them engaged to where they are wanting to spend time with us? So for me, like, backgrounds in baseball. So
we know that we talk baseball a lot.
So taking them to the facilities with me where the team that I coach trains, and then giving them their time and working with them on that. And that's the thing is that baseball is a game of failure. And so, you know, they're 5 and 6 years old, teaching them to hit off a tee and soft toss and all that. And they struggle and they get upset and they get frustrated. And it's just like, guys, it's okay to get frustrated, but it's not okay to let the frustration change how you're going to be moving forward. Take that frustration, think about it, what's going on, and then let's get back into it. Be frustrated for a second, collect yourself, get back in the box, let's get back to swinging. And that's the great thing about kids. Like, short-term memory is huge. And that's for baseball. If you want to be successful in baseball, you have to have short-term memory. Like, you can't dwell on things. Like, you have just cock shot a fastball and the guy hits a 500-foot home run, I got to come back, forget that, just because I got to go back and make the next pitch, the next at bat, next hitter. Same thing. You get a pitch that you should have crushed and you missed it. You let that get in your head, you're screwed the rest of the at bat. Okay, fuck it. I missed it, move back on. So things like that, like working with them on that, like, hey, especially my youngest. My youngest one gets a little bit more frustrated with things. My oldest one is pretty natural at picking up baseball, but my youngest, not so much. And so it's a little bit more work with him, but it's taking that time and ultimately not putting the pressure on. I don't want, like, honestly, if they didn't want to play baseball, cool. But making sure that when they're doing it, that they're completely focused on what they're doing and they're giving it their all. They're really trying and really putting their all into it. And, you know, and you mentioned the rough stuff. I mean, I let my kids fight. Like, I didn't have that with my brother, and him and I just don't have a relationship. There's a lot of aspects to it, but we don't have a very good relationship. But my boys are super close to one another. And just by having the conversations, reading with them, talking to them, doing things with them and being present when I have them is the most important thing, no matter what we're doing. But I do, like you said, being rough, like I let them fight. And I told this story a few times on my show. They like to fight. And so it got to the point where they were throwing punches at each other. And I was like, all right, someone's going to get hurt. So I bought them boxing gloves, little tiny boxing gloves. And the rule is you can't hit above the shoulders or below the waist. So they'll go and they'll get pissed at each other and they'll put those boxing gloves on and they'll go at it. But all body shots, all this. And I was like, hey, if you hit somebody below the waist or above the shoulders, the person that got hit gets to hit back. And so they've gotten really good at that, but they do. They solve a lot of problems that way. But then, like, I like to come in and like, we'll like WWE wrestling stunts on my bed, like choke slams and like tackle them. Hell, I showed them some jujitsu moves. Come to find out that the next door neighbor over at my ex-wife's place was messing with Connor. This kid's 10, 11 years old. And I guess just got a little rough with him, not realizing like, hey, you're 11, he's 6. Well, Connor took offense to that, came up and jumped on his back and choked the kid out. I'm like,
well, that's the thing is, like, one thing that I, in the Army that I learned is I'm going to make fun of you every day, but I promise you nobody else will. Right. That's the camaraderie that comes along with it. And, you know, when I was in Korea, I studied with Master Kim in Taekwondo. Yeah. Did not like it. No. Did not like it. I was not a martial arts guy. I'm more of a street fighter. Yeah. Like, I throw a brick if I have to. Like, I don't give a shit. I just don't want to lose. I haven't done that since I was a teenager. Yeah. Not throwing bricks. I never threw bricks.
Well, and that's the thing too, is like with him being in jiu-jitsu, I've gotten into jiu-jitsu. Like, I want them to have that background. I think it just brings, like,
there's a discipline that comes.
There's a discipline, but also a level of confidence and being able to protect yourself. Like, that's huge for being a man, being able to protect yourself or with your spouse or whoever, female-wise, you're able to protect them. I think that is a manly thing, being a man. That's part of it.
That's why I like being in Missouri, though, too.
Yeah. So,
I mean, you know what I mean by that. Missouri is a different state for that.
Right. So, but yeah, I mean, those are all the things that I'm doing with my boys. And the best thing is when I have them, I'm present with them because I don't, it's 50-50. So, like, when I have them, I want to make sure that I'm with them and the time that I have with them is intentional. And so far, that's been the biggest thing. Obviously, at this age, they're working through and understanding emotions. So putting myself...
It's hard being a dad, though, watching them work through emotions that we've already suppressed.
Right. Well, and that's the thing, though, and talking about that is, I mean, I think that's becoming more and more a thing for men, is like being able to express those emotions or at least understand those and develop that emotional intelligence, because I don't want my kids to have to suppress their emotions. I want them to understand and learn what those emotions are so then they can control them. It's better to have control than to suppress them, in my opinion.
Well, we grew up in a different time frame though too. So for us, it was like, hey, suck it up, buttercup.
No, I mean, that I got that too.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Our generation was different on that, which always brings me to my point is what's changed. And we talked a little bit offline about this, but what's changed? I think it's more of awareness. But, you know, I also believe that for me personally, there's been wars going on, suicides up for men. You know, social media, as much as I'm kind of against social media, it really is bringing awareness to a lot of things. And I think you guys can see, you know, you go on TikTok now or you go on Facebook, mental health for men is everywhere. And like when we were kids, there was nothing. Like, you got into a fight, you lost, dad pick you up, say, hey, next time, here's what we're going to do. Let's go in the backyard. Let's rough it up a little bit. And next time, at least you'll stand your ground. We were never taught to back down. I think that's a pro and a con, though.
I do, too. I agree. I think there has to be a good mix of it. I mean, my first real taste of like mental toughness and emotional intelligence came when I was eighth grade, freshman year of high school. My pitching coach, who's like my older brother, gave me a book called The Mental Game of Baseball. That's like my Bible. I've read that book every single year since I was a freshman in high school. It's awesome. But because every year you can read it and you're going to pull out something different from that. And baseball relates to life. I mean, you're going to fail and you got to learn how to come back from failure. But it also teaches you how to understand your emotions and how to control those emotions, like especially with baseball, because it's a mental game.
Oh, it's definitely mental.
You don't have control of that, you're fucked. And that's why I liked that book so much, was because it taught me from a young age how to understand my emotions and then how to control that and be mentally tough in the situations when I need to be mentally tough, how to stay calm, even though on the inside, like...
We call it, the duck on the water. You're calm and collected on the surface, but you're going a mile a minute underneath. It happens. I mean, you watch a duck, and it's just gracefully going across the water, but underneath the feet are going a mile a minute. And that's a lot of mental health. And like yours was that book. Mine was The Art of War.
Okay.
Yeah, mine was The Art of War. Sun Tzu? Yeah.
I think it's Sun Tzu.
I can never say it, but mine was The Art of War. So everybody has their book. And, you know, I personally, you know, and we talked about this offline, but every day for a guy is a battle. We have to battle. But if we don't battle, what would we do with ourselves? And this is an honest question. If we didn't have a battle every day or something we had to fight, what would we do? Go sit in the Bahamas and drink Mai Tais on the beach? I don't know if I didn't wake up with something, I would struggle.
Right. That's like I was asked, like my business coach asked me this. He's like, if you won the lottery, it was over $1 billion. He's like, do you think that would make you more busy or less busy? And I was like, probably more busy, because I would want to take the money that I got from it and start other things. Like, I don't know if I could ever really be retired, because I don't know what I would want. I don't know what I would do with myself. I love golf, love playing golf.
Dude, we're gonna have to golf because I love golf too.
But I don't know if I could wake up every day and go play golf and be satisfied with that. I would have to be doing something. And that's the great thing about what I do is, like, I mean, there's loan officers that are 70, 80 years old doing what I do. And now, granted, they're not trying to go out there and grow their business at that age. They're just there maintaining what's coming in because they've built this business up. But at the same time, like, they don't, like, that's what they're doing every day because it gives them purpose. And I think that's ultimately, like, I don't know where my purpose would be if I retired, because at that point, like, or I'd have to find a new one.
I could duck hunt every day. Like, literally, I could sit in cold ass water. I could duck hunt every day, or goose hunt, or travel. I mean, because you can find a season as long as you have the money. Yeah. I mean, gotta have the money, but you can find a season just about anywhere. What would you do if you got to retire, Zach?
If I got to retire, I mean, see, like, I'm like him. I would still probably sell houses, man. I love what I do. I have a fun time. I wouldn't feel the pressure that I do now. I would most certainly probably start other businesses. Like, I would love to eventually own a jiu-jitsu school. And I mean, me and my buddy Nick have the kind of dream to do that, you know, years down the road.
Why not now?
Because we're not black belts.
Okay, but why not start figuring out how to build a business now and do it?
I mean, we've talked about it. We've started kind of planning some things out, but we haven't really, I don't know. Yeah, we just haven't really started. It's something we've kind of had a lot of drinks and talked about a lot, but we've never actually, like, made the moves. And we've said kind of where in St. Louis we'd want to put it. And
but the question is, dream's only a dream until you realize it. And yes, you might not be a black belt, but you could already have the business plan done. You could have already that done. So when it does happen, you could just get after it.
Yeah,
see, and
right.
That's something that I talk about when I talk to some of the younger generations, is what is stopping you? You know, one of the things I tell everybody, especially when they're going through divorces and stuff, and guys come, I just have this like propensity for people to come to me. I said, just because you're walking through hell doesn't mean you have to stop. And the second thing is, if you have a dream, the only person stopping you is you. So you could have everything prepped. You get your black belt. Then you could say, okay, fuck, I can go do it now. And it's one of those things where when people ask me questions, Pat, you already know, I'm just going to give you an honest answer. I have no reason not to. But the problem is, though, a well-laid plan comes from years of planning, not last minute. So, like, you're talking about it now. Build a business plan. figure out where your funding comes from and say, okay, this is how I'm going to do it. I started a company, let's be real here, drunk and a fucking blind, and I did an LLC. Did I think it was going to be where it's at today? No. Did I think I could achieve what I could? No. But now it's like, but I agree with the retirement part. What would I do now? Now I'm doing all this other crap. I should be slowing down, and I'm not that old, but I should be slowing down, and I'm speeding up. Because you know what ages a person more than anything?
Doing nothing.
Stagnation. An object at rest will stay at rest unless acted upon.
No, we use the analogy, the tree. Or
yeah,
the,
if you're like a tree, you're either growing or you're dying.
Yeah.
You get struck by lightning every now and again, too. No, I'm just kidding. Hey,
that's dying.
You're not dying, but you're half growing. I still have the same tree out of the farm that does that. So.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, if you're not moving forward and progressing forward and trying to better yourself, then you're moving back, like you said earlier, pulling me backwards. You don't want to do that. You don't want to go backwards. You only want to move forward. And if you're not growing, you're dying. Those are really your options.
You know, it's a hard way to live nowadays, too, because you know, with the economy the way it is, it's starting to get a little better. But, man, dude, sometimes I sit back and I sit at home and like tonight. So you guys saw, and I refer to my son a lot. He's gone. It's the only night I don't have him. In my mind, what am I going to do when I get home? Because I have to live for something. Like that, and being guys, we have to live for something. It could be a miserable life, but we still have something to live for. And he's the reason I push forward. He's the reason I get up and I put my combat boots on every day. I'm willing to go die on that hill. Every single day is for my little man. And all he did was complain about being hungry, but he didn't want, what do we have? What they have out there today? Sugar fire. He didn't want sugar fire. Dad, you can go get me a sandwich. Boy, what you talking about? I can go get you a sandwich. Can you order me DoorDash here? No. but that's that part of it. Like, no. Yeah. Well, Dad, you said you'd take me to lunch, but your mom's also coming to pick you up. I was going to take you to her. Yeah. Well, Dad, why? Because your mom wants to see you. Yeah. But I want you to take me to lunch. Boy, I'm going to have you for the next 7 days. We can go get lunch. Yeah. We're going to the Blues game Saturday. We've got on glass seats. Okay. He's never seen that. I mean, like, literally, like, put our drinks on the seats. And then he's in here talking to Reed. You know, he knows who Reed is. And I'm like, he's like, you see his face? I'm like, hey, because you guys walked out. I go, hey, buddy, that's Reed.
Yeah.
You know, it for him, it's like, he's like, Dad, you know, I'm like, what's up, Reed? I give him a fist bump. I walk by. He's like, you know, kids see, but they also have to dream. And he's seeing me live my dream. But my dream is not his dream. He says to me all the time, Dad, I want to join the Army. I said, no, you're not. You're joining the Air Force. Why? Because I know what kind of pressure he's put under. Realistically, if he's strong enough to do it, I'd be like, boy, get after it. Do your thing. Right now, I want him to have better dreams and better goals. How he adapts to them and he adjusts to them is all on him. But I want him to know that there's a way we can do anything we want to do. And, you know, the sky is the limit. It's just all hard work. You know, what did Ashton Kutcher say? Luck looks a lot like hard work.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, that's a good line.
Yeah, Ashton could have said that at the Nickelodeon Awards. He goes, you know, I never quit a job I was better at, and luck looks a lot like hard work. And I don't go to him for moral advice. Let's be real here.
Yeah.
But when he said that, I'm like, dude, I have actually on a thing on my mirror. I cut it out, put on it, luck looks a lot like hard work. Because I tell him, buddy, you want something? Get up, figure out how you're going to do it, and just get after it. That's what I'm telling you about your studio. Dude, don't say I have to get a black belt before you can do something. You can have all prepped and ready to go. So when it comes time, you rock and roll. Because you can mentally prep for it. Just like if you're going into I don't know what you guys call it in the keto, when you're sparring or whatever you're doing, you're already mentally prepared before you get there. If you're going to start your life doing it, why wouldn't you be mentally prepared before you do it?
You're right, yeah.
And it's just real advice. I mean, Pat, you know, we're cut from the same cloth. My arm still hurts when I scratch the top of my head every day. But you know, when you would go into battle, you weren't going on the mound. You were going into battle.
Yeah, for sure.
You knew the spec of every player. Yeah, you can cut a split finger, and it may not go where you want it to, but you learn from that mistake, and you'll go low and outside the next time just to be safe. Yeah, you take you and that's the thing is, you'll risk taking one off the face because you know if you go low and outside, it's coming right back at you. You know it, but sometimes you have to take the risk. And that's life in general. You always got to take the risk. Risk versus reward.
And that's the thing, though, is just putting those risks out of your mind. Like, I never, like, when
you
have
I. No fear.
Yeah. When I mean, yeah, getting a line drive hit back at you is, especially at that level where you're playing with those type of hitters, It is very likely to happen.
I get the shoulder one time. It hurts so bad.
I've gotten the legs, the knees.
I actually still have a dead spot. You can see right here where I can't feel nerves in it because it hit.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've got a little piece in my leg right here where you can rub your finger on it, and there's a little indention in there.
There's one right there.
Yeah, right from taking one off the shin, you know. But, you know, I never, that thought never crossed my mind. That those
risk versus reward.
Those, and like, people are always like, well, what was it like pitching in front of all those people? I'm like, to be honest, like, have you ever seen the movie with Kevin Costner, The Perfect Game?
Oh, come on.
Clear the Mechanism. Like, that is, have you seen it? Yeah. So he's like on the mound for people that haven't seen this. Kevin Costner is pitching the last game of his career.
And he knows it.
Knows that this is his last game. And he's pitching. He's with the Detroit. He's been with them his entire career. He's a future Hall of Famer. And he's pitching it against the Yankees in Yankee Stadium. And he's like, he always talks like just a flashback of stuff. But he knows when he's on that he can stand on the mound and say, clear the mechanism. And everything just fades from all the noises, everything. And it's just him locked in on that catcher. But that's what it's like in real life. And like, that's what it was like for me. That noise was gone. It was just me and that catcher. That was it.
Let me ask a question, because, you know, being on the mound, I'm with you on that. I don't ever remember seeing one fan or one anything. I don't remember any of it. Like, I can remember a lone inside fastball I pitched. I can remember the first time in high school when I threw a perfect, or not a perfect game, but a no-hitter. I remember those things, but I can't remember one person that was looking at. I can't remember. I remember the catcher. I remember the smell. I remember the sound, but I don't remember seeing one other person.
Yeah, the only times I remember those is the games that I wasn't playing in.
Oh, yeah, because the worst part is you think to yourself, I could have done better in this scenario. Oh, yeah, that killer instinct is what my grandma called it. My little 4'2" grand trying around the killer.
So here's what's crazy about that. So the guys that I saw fail in pro ball, so were the guys that were wishing other guys would fail. They would openly say it in the bullpen. We'd be sitting in the bullpen. I was a bullpen pitcher once I got into pro ball. And you'd have guys in the bullpen, like, hoping guys would fail. Yeah. Just so they could go out there and just do okay. Like, oh, he does shitty. I just need to be okay. I'm like, fuck that. Like, I hope
you're still a team. The World Series isn't won by one person.
Well, in the minor leagues, let's be real. It's not.
You're jockeying.
You're all competing for the top, for those coveted 25 spots in the big league roster. So you're in competition with everybody in your organization, even the guys on your team. No matter if you're a starter, reliever, what, you're just going for that, want to be one of those guys.
You want to be the one ace. You want to be the one ace.
Exactly. So there's no, so like, yeah, I had friends in pro ball, but at the same time, you're in competition with these guys. But there were guys in there that were like, I hope this guy fucks up. And then
I've heard guys say, I hope they blow their arms out. Like, cause
yeah, I never heard anything like that, but I would be like, I heard like they would want guys to fail because like either they had just had a bad outing and that'll erase their bad outing. Or if they get called in and they have a bad outing, they're not going to look as bad. And I'm like, fuck that. I want everybody to succeed because that's going to make me better. And that's
if you're on a win streak that goes 11 games, it doesn't matter. Everybody's looking at the W's. They're not looking at the pitchers. You know, your ERA does mean a lot. You know, back in the old days, it meant a little bit different.
Right.
You know,
well, and that's,
and, you know,
but that's what they told. It doesn't, like, those stats, like, your individual stats are what matters in the minor leagues, because you're not playing, like, you're really not playing to win. The coaches don't even have a say on what the lineup is. They don't, like,
that's true.
They, like, and who's playing, and like, even the pitchers that they, like, there's pitchers that they're, like, before the game, like, hey, these are the guys we want you to use. And so,
but on the reality of that, though, too, and on that level, you know, there is a level to that. On that level, though, it's all what the big club needs anyway. It's what the show needs. If I was a lefty out there and there's four righties and their lefty goes down in the bullpen, or, you know, their middle reliever or their closer, it really doesn't matter. If you have the lowest ERA or the highest, it's your utility until you get called up anyway. Right. You know, a right-handed person, they're a dime a dozen. Right. So it's like, I played for the pros and I'm a center fielder. Yeah. Dude, so did 7,000 other people that were before you. Yeah. What makes you different? Well, you know, and that's the thing is, and I agree with you, but that's a lesson in life. Just like with hunting, that's a lesson in life.
For sure.
You just, you know, luck looks a lot like hard work.
Luck looks a lot like hard work. Man, that's a good one.
Yeah, dude, seriously, when we get out of here, I'll pull up the Ashton Kutcher quote, and when he actually talks about it, and what he says will change the way you think about life. Because he goes out there and kind of cuts on the kids nowadays. He's like, look, you know, you guys are all whining, and he doesn't say it, but you can tell what he's getting at. And it was a Nickelodeon award. And somebody showed him, he's like, dude, you got to watch this. I'm thinking, okay, whatever. And he gets that stupid surfboard.
Yeah.
You know, did you guys ever see the Nickelodeon Studios Now from when we were kids?
No.
Dude, it looks like a corporation building.
Really?
Really?
And all the stuff on it. Yeah, just somebody said, it's like, oh, there's our kids' dreams.
Just want to go and get slimed or whatever.
Yeah. Dude, I forgot.
Did you guys watch that documentary though?
Oh my God. Yeah, we did like a whole episode on it like a while ago. We watched it and it like broke our hearts.
Yeah, just the way they were treating these kids.
Oh, they were, it was bad.
Yeah, it was bad, dude.
I mean, look at her, Ariana Grande, man. She can't even, like, her hair's been bleached so many times that like literally her hair falls out now because she would change. But I mean, I hate to say this, but it's the price of fame too. You know, if you want to be that famous, like we do this because we like to do it. We're trying to spread a message, you know, rugged and ruthless, how people live. Some people aren't like that for people. Like, I would never want my kid to be famous unless that's what he chose. But I'd wait till he was, like, 16 or 17 so we can start at least rationalizing real decisions. But, man, imagine me and these kids that are,
you know. Kids.
Like, 6, 7 years old on TV. I mean, look at the Olsen twins. Look at Lindsay Lohan. Like,
none of those Macaulay child Culkin. Stars, you know.
Oh, yeah, Macaulay Culkin, dude. What's the one girl? Amanda Bynes. It's got, like, tattoos on her face. That's because their parents pushed them to be something. It's like, yeah, don't live. I live through my kids for my dreams, my ambitions, but not for crap like that. Like, I'm like, dude, look, when my kid broke his arm, and this is one of the greatest stories, I was at a 50th birthday party. And my kid, I always thought my kid was tough, you know, and I'm like, okay, he's a tough kid. I'm at this 50th birthday party, and I get a phone call from my ex-wife. And she goes, I think our son broke his arm. We're heading to the hospital. And I'm like, you think he broke his arm? And I'll show you guys pictures offline. His arm was S-shaped. The kid never freaking cried.
Really?
I got there, and he had never cried. I said, buddy, it's okay to cry. He goes, it's okay, Dad. I can handle it. In the hospital room, he said, I can handle it. His arm was S-shaped. He goes, I can handle it.
How'd he break it?
I cried. Like, I'm not gonna lie. I was like, dude, oh my God. You know, I was flipping out. He never once cried. Never once shed a tear. So why? And I'm thinking, don't be tough for me, kid. He goes, Dad, I can handle it. That's what he told me. Dad, I can handle it. I'm thinking, dude, you're 6 years old.
What did he do to, how did he break his arm?
So I guess he was swinging on a jungle gym and he went to go grab it. And when he fell backwards, he put his arm back and rolled over on it. I mean, it was S-shaped.
Oh, geez.
Like, and he goes, I can handle it, Dad. I mean, by that point, he was morphined up by the time I got there. He thought the little, and you know, they have the little kid injector things where they put it in there, but it's like a thing. He thought he was Spider-Man. I'm like, dude, I need some of that just to calm me down, but he never cried. Got taken in the ambulance, thought it was cool. Thinking, boy, you got to let some of that emotion out. He never once had a problem. I had a picture of him with his little helmets on. Man, he made me cry a few times. He headbutted me more than once. And I was like, that clunk. I'm like, blood's coming down my face. And I'm just like, dude, you know, I'm not going to lie. I watered. It was because it was right.
You
the mouth.
Get you in the nose right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, let's go with that. It hit me in the nose. His blood's gushing down my mouth. And he would smile. So I had a little red, white, and blue helmet on. Like, it was awesome.
I remember my dad telling me a story when I was, I don't know, like 2 or 3 years old, and he just got done giving me a bath, and he was drying my hair, and I hated it when he would like take the towel and do this, so I would squirm, and I just went back like that.
Ooh.
Knocked his ass out. My mom heard a thud, came running upstairs, and I'm standing there with a towel, and my dad's just out.
The worst part is, Pat, you and I are not small people. No offense, Zach. Not knocking on you, but I'm saying we're not small people. That kid was 7. He had just turned 7 in November. Look how big that kid is. Dude, last night we watched, he used to call it The Pretty Girls That Sing, but it was Pitch Perfect, and he loves that movie. He has a thing for Brittany Snow.
Okay, I can't blame him.
And the one girl, the tall one with the big boobs, like he has a thing for her. He always likes watching her jump around. Like, dude, look, I love you, kid, but you're a little too young for that. And he was getting all excited. Well, he kind of threw an elbow into me because he wanted to, like, lay on me. So he kind of threw the elbow down. Dude, I thought he broke a rib, man. I was like, dude. He's like, what, Dad? I'm like, we're a good kid? Oh, like I knew it. I was trying to hold it off, but he just dug that little elbow right between the ribs too, man. Like I felt it. I was like, oh. And then he just laughs, and then he farted. He's a boy.
Yeah, mine does the same thing. So they'll come climb in bed. They'll usually come in around 3:30 or 4 o'clock in the morning, and they'll climb in bed with me and fall asleep the rest of the through until we wake up. Well, my oldest that you saw here today, you know, he's a big kid, but he curls up in a little ball. I don't even know he's there. My youngest, who wasn't here today, is built like your son. He is 5 years old, and he is strong.
Oh yeah,
and thick. And I mean, he's probably 4 or 5 inches shorter than my oldest, and they weigh roughly the same, but he's just so dense that he feels way heavier when I pick him up than when I pick up Connor. And so, but anyway, yeah, that kid, I mean, he turns into the fucking Karate Kid when he gets in bed. Legs are going everywhere, arms are going everywhere. I can't tell you how many times that fucking kid just punches me in the face. Dude. And I'm just like, Jesus, Oliver, what the fuck?
Someday you're gonna miss that though. Like,
oh, I know.
Like,
That's why I let it happen. Like, my ex-wife was like, Pat, why? Like, quit letting him sleep in. I'm like, it's not like it's gonna happen forever. So like, why would like I'm not like it, that's their like they want to come climb in bed with me.
Oh yeah.
They're not gonna do that forever. There's gonna be a point in time where they're gonna be like, fuck you, Dad, leave me alone. And I'm gonna be like, dude,
that's where I'm at.
You used
now.
To come climb in bed with me and hang out with me. What the fuck? He's like, fuck you. You know? I'm like,
yeah. And that's where I'm at now. Is he's like, he'll look at me. And we're playing Fortnite or something, which I talk a lot about on my podcast and how much crap he talks. Like, he's gotten booted more than once for talking crap, like probably adults. Yeah. And the other night, he comes to me and goes, well, Dad, I'm tired. Going to bed. I'm like, all right, you want to watch the movie? He's like, nah, I'm good. I'm like, huh.
Yeah, right?
Cool, man. Yeah. But then last night, he's like,
I'm here by myself.
Yeah, I'll just sit here on the couch.
Fuck me, huh?
Watch a bunch of movies, but last night, for some reason, like out of the blue, he comes in here. I tell him to go to bed. I'm like, buddy, it's time for bed. You know, we have a strict cool down period, which you know what the cool down period is? Hey, dude, get your ass in bed. That's cool down period. You can watch TV for a half hour, set the alarm. He sets his Alexa or whatever it is, and he does his thing. But last night, he comes in here, Dad, I want you to come lay with me. I'm like, nah, bud, we're not doing that. Dad, please. I'm like, all right. Dude, I was in there 10 seconds. He was out in his bed. And it was one of those things where I was like, I miss this, but in the same sense, I understand why it can't happen anymore. Yeah. But I did. I literally laid down. He didn't turn the TV on, didn't want anything. He lay there. All of a sudden, like, I mean, 10 seconds. I'm like, damn, dude, what are you, like a 30-year-old, like, foreman in an ironworks plant? Like, I kind of look over, I get up, and then I go, and then that's when it hit me. I go sit on the couch, and I'm like, fuck, I'm lonely. Like, I hadn't had that in so long that I'm like, I really kind of miss that. But that's, you know, you're raising a little man. You have to. Sometimes you have to let the little man be the little man. And he you saw him strutting over here until mama came, and he's strutting. My dad, I'm like, dude, I'm like one of the smallest dudes up in this joint. And I'm 6'3", 245, and I'm sitting next to Reed.
Yeah.
Like, look, I don't care how big you think you are. You're 6'3".
Reed, you're,
like,
you're tiny.
Cam's the same way, but he's just shorter.
I haven't seen Cam up here yet, so.
Oh, dude, he's.
I've met him, just out and about. Just, oh, hey, Cam, like, hey, what's up? You know,
dude, when he comes in here, first podcast I ever did, first one hasn't even aired yet, but it was the first one I ever did. He came in here, and we polished off. Oh, dude. Crap load of beer, and then we polished off the whole jar of moonshine that somebody made here. Him and I, we started talking like conspiracy theories, and like I was telling you how the pyramids were made, Freemasonry, and all that stuff. And like, we went from like, hey, because you know most of the guys like that play those type of sports, they talk about, they have a generic set of questions, and they literally will just sit there and be like, so I did this and this, and I do this organization, I'm part of this. People like us are like, okay, fucking cool. You're sitting in my pocket. You're sitting next to me. So what's the square root of an isosceles triangle? They're like, wait, what? Throw them off their loop, and then they become a lot of fun because now they get to be them. Reed's the same way. They're all the same way. But, you know how it is. Interviews are interviews, and, we can have camaraderie because literally, guys, I explain this. Here's where they do their podcast. Here's where I do mine. Mine's a proctology office right now. I haven't built mine up. So But yeah, they're right across the hall from me. So like when they come in, like, hey, what's up? And we like sometimes have to squeeze in because like they're angled. Yeah. And we got the back corner. We're pushing the back.
Tucked back in the
yeah,
corner.
We're away from everything.
We're in the speakeasy today because they're jackhammering going on in the back.
That was my nickname in high school.
The jackhammer?
Yeah, all 3 seconds of it.
but where our office is, it's great. Yeah, so we're here. This is where my first podcast.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty sweet space.
It's like, a great, I mean, this room's cool.
Yeah.
For sure.
Well, now Punchline Productions is doing everything. So now you guys are transferring over. And
yeah, it's so far so good. Yeah.
I mean, when I first came here, I don't know if you guys saw my other podcast, because if you didn't, I'm not worried about it because, you know, they do a lot. But we were talking about it. Like, I came in here and he was literally just getting here too. So when I joined, because I know you just joined, Pat, and I've been here since mid-July.
Yeah, it was October.
Yeah, August. I remember you came in because I was sitting there working.
I thought you were Ed Fogelbach for a second when you were out there talking on the phone, and I was gonna walk up and I'm like, hey, what's up, Ed? Like, because you like the truck. I saw your truck, and I was like, I was gonna say, hey, did you get a new truck? And then you're like, oh, hey, I'm Joey. I'm like, oh, yeah. I'm like, he's like, but there's so many Joeys here, just call me Duck Slayer. I'm like, all right.
Well, yeah, that's okay. So that's the whole Duck Slayer thing here started as a joke. I don't know if you know that.
Oh, no, I didn't know that. I thought that's what you really called yourself.
No, I have never called myself the Duck Slayer. But so one thing I complained here when I came in here, so Scott wasn't here when I first came in here. Like, he was out of town. I think he was either on the Argentina Hunt or he was out of town. And I walked through. I'm like, yeah, let's do the spot. You know, what do I have to do? So I fill out the application. And there's, one of these times we'll do a podcast. We kind of walk around Adventure Unknown to kind of show what it is. Because, I mean, it is actually a really cool facility. But the one thing I said is there's no ducks here. You notice there's all these other animals. So then he's like,
in the bathroom, there's two duck feathers.
Feathers, but those are painted feathers. But there's one set of ducks at the corner at the lockers. And I kind of made a comment. I said, well, fuck it. I'll be the Duck Slayer and I'll put my locker right here, you know, because they asked me where I wanted to be. And I said, you can, you know, put that on my name tag. I don't give a shit. Like, kind of fucking around. Well, now it says Duck Slayer. I go out with Scott. You heard the joke today. I said, well, I'm not really Duck Slayer. And Scott goes, oh, yes, you are. I'm like, well, look, I had a good day that day. And, but it's kind of the name stuck here. But normally they just call me Joey. Yeah, 4-man limit. His daughter, oh my god,
she's incredible,
dude. Oh my goodness. So we got that, and I'm trying to get the footage from Scott. He has it on his camera.
Daughter, right?
Yeah, Krista. So the whole day I'm calling in birds for him. We're calling, and it started out really, really slow. And like when I say slow, like when we drove up, there's probably every bit of 3,000 or 4,000 ducks just took off, but there was no sound, which is very rare. Normally, you hear ram, ram, ram. You can hear them. We come rolling down the hill, all this water. All of a sudden, we come around this tree bank, and there's all these birds. Whole day was kind of slow. Well, the last set of shots for the day, I had limited out. So I had limited out first, and Scott had limited out. And Krista and Kevin needed one bird apiece. So I'm working this bird. They're coming in, and they kind of turn around. They kind of do this loop, and I see him. I'm like, I look over at Kevin, because Kevin's next to me and Krista's next to Scott. You know, there's four in a line. Scott's on one side, I'm on the other. He goes, Scott, Krista, Kevin, myself. And I'm like, take these fucking birds. By the time I said the word, when I said take these fucking birds, it's on camera. Krista, his daughter, picks up her shotgun, turn around, boom, within like a half a second, this bird just feathers everywhere. I was like, oh shit. And then Kevin turns around, pops it, feathers it. And you'll see me on camera because it's going to be on the podcast. And I'm like, oh, my God. I'm high-fiving her. We're because we had just limited out. And Scott was like, by 12:30, we had like 5 birds in the pocket between 4 of us. And you can get 6 birds a person. We had 5 between all of us. It doesn't pick up till 12:30. We need to get heading out. I'm like, dude, I've had some of my best hunts are between 12 and 2. The birds get up and start moving because they start getting whatever. And he's like, no, no. All of a sudden, here comes birds. A little bit of time. They start getting bigger. And then we ended up hitting 24 birds that day, and all because, and Scott was ready to leave at 12:30. I'm like, dude, just wait. You know, between 12 and 2 is when I kill most of my birds. Sure as shit, by like 3 o'clock, we were out the door walking with a full mess of birds.
Damn, that's awesome. That's awesome.
So, hey, how did you get into duck hunting? Was that something you always did as a kid?
It's kind of a long story. So I got into quail and dove. One of my mom's friends had taken me out and do it. My buddy and I love duck hunting, but I could never find anybody to go with. Like, I always wanted to get into it. I didn't even own a shotgun, but I would like, I went one time with my buddy Tony and a couple other guys and just fell in love with it. But, you know, growing up, I ended up joining the Army, doing a bunch of other stuff. And then my best friend Ray, one day, he was a multi-station station commander. He was an Army recruiter, but he was in charge of multi-stations. I went out to Indiana one time, and I'd always mess with duck calls and always stuff like that. And one day he said, grab it. We literally went to Gander Mountain. They're not even abysmal. He's like, you're buying all this shit. We're going hunting. And then, dude, it was crack. It was, I call it legal heroin, because once you get in it, get with a group of guys, see this birds fold in, man.
I know so many people that are so into it, and I've never.
Oh my God, it's the greatest thing. You got to understand something. You'll go out there and bust your ass, plan for weeks, for potentially 2 minutes worth of shooting in an 8-hour day. Because when the birds come in, boom, 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 you know, 2 seconds, 2 minutes, you will literally get excited for 2 minutes out of a day. Wish my ex-wife would have. Sorry, Sherry, you were just here. I apologize. That was just a joke. Sorry. We're all friends here.
Jokes.
Jokes. This jokes. Guys doing things. Yeah. I mean, I would have had time for a cigarette for 2 minutes, but that's a different story. But
awesome. Anything else you want to chat about before we call it a day?
I mean, not really. I mean, because it's not like we're next to each other. So we're like, hey, I got a question for Joey. Like, we can, like, just put a lav on, come on in, you know, that's how it's going to be. You guys come to my blind and I'll look like a very minuscule person because you got like jujitsu shit all over the wall. And I mean, guys, let me explain some to you. So they say we're moving into this office. I walk away for like 40 minutes. This office is totally different. Like I hear a drill. I hear something. It's kind of like Step Brothers where he's like, no power tools.
It's my toothbrush.
It's like something you could buy in a store. So much more room to do activities.
Yeah, we had to make it our own, you know. I wanted to just try to kind of recreate what we had in my basement in that room. So, I mean.
And your peanut butter castle. Bench warmers.
Yeah.
My peanut butter castle.
Well, we like to end the show with one last question. We call it the tombstone game. Here lies Joey. What's it say on your tombstone?
I like pepperoni and sausage.
That's funny. Corey said the exact same thing.
Really?
He's like, well, my first thought was the ingredients, you know, like the tombstone pizza commercials. But yeah,
that's funny because that's weird to think that way. On my tombstone, it would say, "Lived a hell of a life with his dick in the dirt, smile on his way up." That's it.
Perfect.
It. That's awesome.
That's awesome.
Well, thank you guys so much for tuning into the show. Make sure you click that subscribe button if you haven't already. That helps us out a ton. Click that like button, comment what you guys thought below, and we'll see you next time.